Ready room, Daily Sentinel.
A problem for the police, but a crusade of the law.
To the lair and quick.
You found anomalies, haven't you, Tower?
Tune in to the Adventure Frequency Podcast Network and set your dials to danger.
Hello, thank you so much for tuning in and setting your dials to danger. We want to issue a huge thank you to everyone who went out and gave our first episode a shot. Whether you're a fan, new or returning, or a member of our launch team, thank you so very much. We're glad you enjoyed our inaugural episode, and we're happy to have you come back for more. We have a lot of great adventures in store for you in the coming months and can't wait to share them with you. Of course, we're not on a traditional radio broadcasting from a station, so our dial is the subscribe buttons over at iTunes and Stitcher. When you get a chance, we'd love for you to set that dial to danger by using the subscribe button to subscribe to our podcast, which will bring the adventures straight to you without having to go and get them, and it will help others find and enjoy the great stories we produce here on the Adventure Frequency Podcast Network. I'll calm down when you get down those stairs and put a bullet between her eyes. Miles Jensen shouted at his second-in-command, Hoke, who lounged in a plush leather chair on the opposite side of Jensen's parlor desk. Thunder boomed in the distance, and the rain picked up, pelting the windows that lined the room as if Jensen had timed his outburst for dramatic effect. Jensen was wiry and athletic, with a toxic, acidic personality from a steady diet of tobacco and bourbon since he was 10 years old. Standing up, the tall man spun to the bar behind his parlor desk and refreshed his drink from the large stash of bottles lying there. He didn't bother to offer anything to Hoke and even challenged his subordinate with a sour look of disdain in the mirror backing the bar. Hoke didn't take the bait, but instead, he fished a cigarette out of his vest pocket and went about lighting it. The rain streaked down the windows and coated the slick terrace with the pooling water almost instantly. I don't think Rutledge would like that idea too much, boss. Hoke, eyes down, spoke around his fresh cigarette. His lighter clicked shut simultaneously with the lid on Jensen's bourbon tumbler as the two men returned again to their primary vices. Carl Hoke was Jensen's exact opposite. Rutledge had joked that one looked like the reflection of the other in a strange, warped surface mirror the day the two paired up. Hoke was broad with a deep, gravelly voice, and he carried an air of someone who didn't much care what you asked him to do. Sitting guard was really no different from chopping someone into little pieces. "Don't you worry about what Rutledge likes and doesn't like, Hoke." Jensen ambled over to the large bay window that overlooked the river. He reflected on how he ended up here, managing a three-man still team with a self-styled mystery man, or a woman, as was the case today, tied up in the basement awaiting his boss's arrival that was sure to bring with it further orders. As if Jensen himself couldn't handle it, the thought smoldered deep within Jensen. Brownsville was an island in the big river created accidentally while trying to redirect the river's course. The accident was quickly transformed into an opportunity in the amount of 4 square miles of riverfront real estate seemingly bought up overnight. 4 large terrace homes, or brownstones, were constructed along the center of the island like a mountain ridge on an otherwise flat piece of land. Many other parcels of land would continue to be divided up and sold. Most would end up with lavish, beautiful homes or cottages built upon them, closer to the waterline. But the row houses went up immediately in the center of town. Each unit filled as soon as the construction was completed. Once 3/4 of the units were full, Rutledge purchased a few of his own and had recruited both Jensen and Hoke to run a still and set a boat anchored on the river off the waterline of Brownsville. The plan was to bring the product into the end unit terrace in the middle of the night and then simply drive it out each morning like everyone else who would leave their homes for work in the neighboring Serpent City. Hoke loved the lavish digs. He'd never had it so good. Jensen hated them. He'd allowed Rutledge to recruit him in the hopes of working in the casino with fancy suits, big cars, and audacious bras in his bed every night, but ended up here on the edge of the world instead. Lightning tore through the sky and brought Jensen back to the present. "How did you find her again?" Jensen sipped the last of his drink and decided to slow down just a bit. He didn't want to navigate the streets drunk amidst the storm if it came to that. Besides, he could already tell that he'd had enough. His vision seemed to be closing in on him on all sides. Everything was much darker along the peripherals. I already told you. Briggs found her on the terrace with a sprained ankle while on patrol. She was just lying there. Hoke exhaled the words from the lounge chair, the gray smoke from the cigarette immediately being consumed by the spreading darkness. Jensen didn't much care for Briggs. The man was an idiot who Rutledge employed to live here as security, regardless of Jensen's protests. Hoke handled Briggs so Jensen didn't have to, and that was just fine by Jensen's recollection. Let me get this straight. Jensen moved back behind the desk, bumping into the edge of the sofa on his way, and nearly fell into the chair that waited there behind it. He pulled his suit vest down in an effort to collect himself, and clicked on the desk lamp to cut the darkness in the hopes of seeing a little better. It didn't help. This Lady Raven, as she's called, has played havoc with her Canadian supply lines for months. She's taken out 3 stills in the last week, and God knows how many of our men. Yet, you expect me to believe that Briggs simply finds her cowering with a sprained ankle right here on our terrace? As he spoke, Jensen ticked off the items in an imaginary list by uprising fingers from his clenched fist, one by one. Most of that is just rumors, boss. We don't know any of this was actually her doing. I mean, look at her. She don't even weigh 100 pounds soaking wet. Hoke crushed his cigarette out in the large crystal ashtray on the corner of the desk. The last plume of smoke hovered around the desk lamp and seemed to be highlighted by all of the blackness that filled the room, only to then consume the smoke and transform it into shadow a moment later. Rumors that Rutledge seems to believe. Don't forget that. He wants to talk to this dame himself, for Christ's sake. Jensen was further agitated and waved his hand at the door to the basement, which was now shrouded in so much shadow he could no longer tell where the oak door or its brass handle ended and the walls of the office began. That's why it's not a good idea to go down there and shoot her between the eyes. Hoke fished for another cigarette, but stopped when he got a look at Jensen's expression of unease in the thick shadows. What is it? Hoke asked, not yet able to see it. Why is it so dark in here? The desk lamp flickered, and the bulb fizzled out mysteriously with Jensen's question. It's the storm, that's all. But Hoke stopped mid-sentence when the light bulb fizzled out. They say it's the biggest one in years on the radio. Hoke nearly whispered as he finished his thought on his feet, joining Jensen, who stood from behind the desk. Both men stood near the basement door, now completely hidden in shadow. The shadows had spread so far that the far corner of the parlor and the hallway leading to the den were pitched in total blackness now, as if something large were floating over the row home and blotting out the moonlight from above. There was the storm, of course. Jensen could see the dense cluster clouds building and swirling with occasional lightning, but not even those clouds should cause that thick of a black shadow indoors. The two men looked at one another for a split second. If he'd looked close enough, Jensen thought, he could actually see the shadows flow out from under the basement door, like ink spilling out of a toppled jar. What the? Hoke mumbled, pulling his pistol from the shoulder rig. Get down there already, Jensen ordered. Hoke opened the door to the basement and stepped back, allowing it to swing wide on its way toward the wall. Jensen stumbled backward, falling onto his desk and then onto the floor to flee the darkness that plumed into the parlor like a gaseous wave. Hoke crouched in the shooter stance, gun drawn and at the ready, pointed directly into the dark stairwell, allowing the darkness to spread out around him. Go, what are you waiting for? Jensen ordered, getting up off the floor. Although he couldn't see a subordinate, Jensen heard Hoke's footsteps take the stairs down toward the basement as he picked up the phone and dialed Rutledge. He entered the basement by memory and continued feeling his way in with his hands and feet. It helped that the man had loaded and unloaded literally thousands of crates in and out of this basement from the riverboat over the last few months. As his back foot touched down on the basement floor, he crouched again and used his ears to survey the area since his eyes were useless in all of the blackness. Amidst the shadows, Lady Raven began to rise up off the floor, along with the chair she was chained to in the middle of the basement. She floated through the air silently until she hovered below the floor of the parlor and now resided above her head. Hoke moved left, one hand on the wall of the basement, the other gripping his pistol out in front of him as he penetrated the shadows in search of the prisoner. His movements were careful and calculated as he began to systematically move through the open space. Once the large man was beneath her, Lady Raven allowed herself and the chair she was chained to drop, trampling Hoke and forcing him to the ground in an unconscious pile. Suddenly, the basement quickly cleared of the gaseous shadows, leaving only the stairway chock full of total blackness as it continued seeping out into the office and parlor around Jensen's desk, filling up the room. Lady Raven located Hoke's keys. Pulling them free, she unlocked one hand, then the other. Her ankles followed, and she effortlessly rose up and off the crumpled man, now covered by her chair and chains, like a bird taking flight from the ground. Stopping at the bottom of the stairs, Lady Raven reached out into the empty air. The shadows that filled the stairs repositioned, forming tendrils that reached out and collected Hoke's pistol from within his belt. The shadow tendrils placed the pistol in Lady Raven's hand just as she grasped the cool metal. Aiming toward the other side of the basement, she fired two quick shots to make it appear as though Hoke had located and killed her before letting go of the pistol. The metal death machine hung in the air, supported by thick shadow tendrils that grasped it and held it there. Lady Raven moved up the stairs to the shadows, no longer needing the firearm for further distractions, and entered the parlor to finish her work. "Did you get her?" Jensen threw the last of the contents of his glass down his throat and slammed the glass down harder than intended on the desk as he stood up and behind it. "Hoke, did you kill her?" Jensen shouted. Suddenly, a dark, large, bird-like shape launched from within the thick shadows which seemed to cling to it as it moved out of the stairwell and into the office. Jensen screamed and fell back into the parlor desk chair. He pulled out a drawer and rooted around inside when Lady Raven landed atop the desk with a loud crack, her heavy boot heels forcing the drawer shut on Jensen's wrist. Lightning pierced the sky upon her impact and the desk, which only illuminated Jensen. Lady Raven was cloaked in the thick black shadows, even in the light of the lightning flash. "I'll kill you!" Jensen shrieked in pain. "Can't get your arm free?" Lady Raven spoke with a wickedly smooth voice that sounded like rich, thick port. "Who are you? What are you?" Jensen howled, yanking at his trapped wrist with his other free hand. "You called for more men," she ignored his question. "They're coming. Even the boss himself is coming," Jensen spelt angrily. "His goon squad will take care of you, you bitch." Jensen stood up to try and gain leverage, his wrist still trapped, and the storm clouds moved above with a rumbling of thunder off in the distance. "Perfect," Lady Raven chortled as she performed a spin kick to Jensen's jaw that sent the man to the ground with a loud crack as his wrist shattered as it came free of the desk drawer. Backflipping off the parlor desk, Lady Raven hovered midair for just a moment as the shadows were pulled to her like iron shavings to a magnet. To the casual observer, as it was often reported in the papers, it looked as if she wore a cloak that was made of shadow itself. She landed crouched, her shadow cloak billowing out just above the floor. "Ollie, ollie, oxen free," Lady Raven spoke to no one. Lightning ripped through the sky, followed by thunder that was much closer and louder than the previous blast. Lady Raven used the light in her effort to survey the walls and the items that adorned it here in the gangster's parlor. Moving around the desk, careful not to step on Jensen, Lady Raven moved to the large mirror that backed the bar. Feeling along its edges, she found what she was looking for and pushed in gently. With a click, the mirror popped out on one edge that had been loaded in place with springs. Gripping it, she swung it off the wall like a door, knocking decanters and glasses to the floor in crashes. Behind the mirror was a small cubbyhole. Inside it were three shelves. On the middle shelf were stacks of $100 bills bound together. Lady Raven reached into the cubbyhole and grabbed two stacks. "Ah, ah, ah," stated a man who pulled the slide back on a submachine pistol he carried into the office from an open veranda door. The sound of the wind and rain that ushered into the parlor filled the previously silent room. The bushes and trees encircling the home stood bent at a near 90-degree angle from the storm winds. Lady Raven arched up into the air in a flip until she was nearly sitting on the ceiling just as the mirror backing the bar shattered as it became riddled with bullets. The submachine pistol roared as it spat death into the parlor. "Thieving whore!" the man shouted from the French doors that hung open and banged against the veranda. He stepped back, adjusting his aim, and began firing at the ceiling. Lady Raven ran up over the crest of the ceiling and down the opposite wall with a huge window overlooking the back and side yards of the brownstone, being pelted by the storm. Outside on the street, a long black sedan idled with its headlights aimed at the house, its beams twinkling in the thousands of raindrops that fell between it and the brownstone. "Right on time," Lady Raven spoke sharply under her breath. "It's not polite to shoot at a lady." Lady Raven lunged at the man with the submachine pistol, plowing into his suited gut and taking them both to the concrete pad of the veranda. Slick with rain and beginning to freeze over, the two slid off the pad and into the bushes and mud that surrounded it. Immediately, gunfire arose from the car outside the brownstone, and bullets riddled the bushes and grass. "Bitch!" the suited man, now stained with mud, pulled the revolver from under his coat. The two pugilists lost sight of one another upon impacting the cement pad, however, and the suited man's shots went wild. Lightning ripped open the night sky again directly above them. This time, the thunder followed right behind it. The storm was getting closer by the second. The brownstone and the veranda lit up, all parties able to see one another in the soaking estate. Lady Raven dove for cover. Suda man fired twice more. Two people from the sedan also fired twice more. All activity then abruptly ceased when the lightning finally made contact with a huge elm tree in the yard. The lightning split the elm into two separate flaming wooden missiles. One bounced through the veranda, marking the concrete pad with black sooty burning sap and engulfing the parlor of the brownstone in an explosion of sparks and flames. The other fiery missile landed on the long black sedan idling outside the yard, shattering all the windows and crushing the roof in on itself. Lady Raven found the Suda man lying on the veranda dead from the explosions of the tree during this lightning strike. Three jagged pieces of smoldering wood jettisoned from her neck. Quickly changing her focus to living adversaries, she moved carefully toward the car. Outside it, one man lay over the hood of the car, half his body crushed by the burning tree that lay atop it. Another man lay a few yards from the car itself, not moving either. Lady Raven kicked the pistol free of the second man's hands and surveyed the car. Touching the rear door of the sedan, she closed her eyes and took a deep, icy breath before using her powers to fill up the car with solid shadow. She was much quicker and was able to conjure up much denser shadow outdoors than she'd been able to do from inside the basement. In under a minute, all the flames were out and the burning half of the tree steamed, sizzled, and popped in the rain and chilling night air. "I'd have preferred to capture you alive," Lady Raven spoke to the dead and unconscious man that surrounded her. She leaned into the car and came out a minute later with a man's billfold. Opening it, she quickly surveyed the contents and then made it disappear under her shadow cloak. "This will do, though," she commented on her discovery. With that, Lady Raven vanished. Reports would later indicate that she turned up four blocks west along the river's edge, climbing atop a matte black BMW R4 prototype motorcycle, only to speed off into the night.
The Adventure Frequency.